Football Weekly Extra.
Champions League special. First verdicts on those Anglo-Italian clashes like George W. Bush, Serie A teams struggling with the English. Three games, no wins and no goals scored by the peninsula's finest. But, ask the pod, is it really all over? There's a verdict from Spain as Liverpool break the Bernabeu and Lyon block Barca. Plus, Bayern shock the experts and Raphael Honigstein with the week's biggest win. UEFA Cup, as Harry and Martin leave out more starters than a Metze bar, we ask why is interest in the UEFA Cup so wafer thin? And Barry brings us the answers. Elsewhere, there's posts, the Carling Cup final, and top footballing superstitions. For example, apparently Ashley Young likes to touch wood the night before a game, from what I've seen on the internet, at least. All that in Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody. On board today, deputy something of the Guardian's online football coverage, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
That's about right, isn't it, Barry?
Just about, yeah.
A woolly of hat, but crystal of mind, minute-by-minute maestro Rob Smythe.
Hello, James.
Hi, Rob. Enjoyed your work on the San Siro final the other day.
You did?
Not final. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Guardian's chief football writer, Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Author this week of a controversial and shock report that Serie A might not be as strong as it used to be.
People are scandalised.
Right.
What gave them that impression?
How many times is it that article has been published so far this season?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping it'll see me through to retirement.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, yes.
It's worth mentioning the British Press Awards.
Right.
The nominations were announced today, and we have been resolutely unnominated for anything whatsoever, everyone right. in this pod.
Well,
so hats off
I think
to us.
That's very, very shrewd judgment by the people in charge, I think.
Well, there you go. That was your contention, Serie A not as strong as it used to be.
Well, I mean, it's a curious thing because...
it's not that curious when
because,
you look at...
No, because I blame you, I was going to say, because people...
Kevin, let's not have this conversation. For the sake of the listeners, I know, it used to be very strong in the 90s,
no,
it's not anymore.
I was going to say, it just seemed amazingly glamorous, and it still lingers on because of
right.
you.
Right. Well, I think it was also because they had the likes of Maradona and Van Basten and Hullit, and they used to win everything. And they've had a big crisis, and they're arguably on the way back now.
Yeah,
but I'm just curious to know what your reaction is to the three results, which I walked into the Guardian's base station today, and somebody said to me, oh, you're back in time for the humiliation of the Italian clubs. I don't know that I would see it that way. What's your take on it?
Not humility at all. I thought Juventus were quite competitive last night at Stamford Bridge. Actually, it's funny, you shouldn't feel sentimental about a team who went down for match rigging scandal, but actually it was nice to see Pavel Nedved and Del Piero back playing in at this kind of level. Afterwards, I was told this is Nedved's last season, and he really is calling it a day. No, apart from this, a Czech guy said to this time he means it.
Oh, really?
But he ran a huge distance last night, and I believe he's been absolutely appalling most of the season in Serie A, but certainly he was quite impressive in that game. But they weren't really going. They had maybe one shot of real danger from it.
Well, there was then Nedved shot right at the end.
Right at the end, yeah.
And there was another chance which
Del Piero
Thiago
chance,
did very well to set up Del Piero.
But Chelsea, this is the other thing. I'm not too sure about the long-term English football because Chelsea clearly have got a bit stale and Hiddink may help them in the short term, but how good they'll be next season, I don't know. Arsenal, you have to take Arsene Wenger's word for it that they're destined for greatness if you give them long enough. Liverpool... internal problems. If it wasn't for Manchester United, perhaps we wouldn't have such a rosy view of the English scene.
Rob, were you doing minute by minute on Chelsea last night?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Okay. And what was your view? I mean, Chelsea had a 1-0 win against Roma in the group stages and then got completely trashed at the Stadio Olimpico. Do you see them comfortably going through in Turin?
No, I think it's 1-0 is kind of almost a par score, I think, for the home team. So I think it'd go either way. Chelsea were really good until they scored, but I think after that, I kind of got the sense that they realised the next goal was so important because you go 2-0, they're kind of away. If it goes 1-1, Juventus have a lot of momentum. And it was kind of fairly cautious because of that. I think when they really went at Juventus, Drogba in particular caused them a lot of trouble. But Juventus were very good for the last... They kept a lot of the ball. They didn't really create much, as Kevin said.
Yeah, without ever really threatening apart from that.
But then that's kind of the way of it away from home in Europe, really. I think it's kind of as you were. It's probably 50-50.
Interesting. We'll talk a little bit more about Roma and Arsenal in a second. First off, though, the big clash between the Premier League leaders and the Serie A leaders. Inter 0-0 with Man United on Tuesday evening. It's a dangerous scoreline, everybody says, because in 15 years, only once have Man United had a 0-0 away and still gone through. And that was last season, of course, against Barcelona. Still, having said that, the idea of Inter going to Old Trafford and coming away with either a score draw or a victory is not necessarily one that we're all comfortable with, I suspect.
But 0-0 is peculiar. I think we have such a kind of phobia about the away goal now that some people actually say they'd rather lose 2-1 away than draw 0-0, which is entirely irrational. I still think 0-0, I mean, you just do your job at home, you go through it. If United don't go through, it won't be because of what happened at Inter where they were outstanding. It would be because they don't play well enough at home. Inter, I think they score a lot more away from home, is that correct, this season?
Yeah,
but they did look. United was so superior. And of course, they will have Vidic back. You would have to say, based on what we saw on Tuesday, that United should go through. But Mourinho kind of has done United in not dissimilar circumstances before. And that kind of adds something to it that otherwise wouldn't be there.
I'm still a bit bewildered by the way Mourinho's working this Inter team. I mean, Rivas just seems an astonishing decision to play him.
And they last till half-time.
Yeah.
And by Montari. All accounts, he has fallen out with Cordoba. Yeah. And that's why he didn't pick him.
He's
even
fallen out with someone.
Yeah, funny that. And so it was basically a pissing contest, for want of a better word, and he nearly came unstuck because Rivas right. was absolutely awful.
Well, there's other
and
players.
In the end, Mourinho got away with it till half time and was able to make the change.
I think United's intent really surprised Inter. That's probably the most positive they've been away in Europe since they beat Deportivo 7 years ago. I think it surprised everyone, and I think it took Inter 45 minutes to kind of get used to it.
I think the question also is, I mean, Inter being 10 points ahead, 10 points ahead,
nine,
in Serie A. I mean, you wonder how on earth did they get to that position? They just seemed very shaky. But United, although they play really well, they don't score as many goals as they have maybe in the past, and they kind of let them off the hook. And you have to give Inter some credit; they were resilient.
Julio Cesar had a brilliant game.
Yeah, fantastic. Yep. Yeah. But you look at Adriano and yet again,
Adriano.
What happened to
yeah?
What I mean, not really fit, is he? I mean, he's fitter than he was, but you wouldn't say he was a honed.
But this is a player whose physical strength was one of his great assets, and he's now able to be knocked over by a passing ball.
But and also the usual Ibrahimovic big game, etc., etc. You know.
Well, I feel a bit sorry for Ibrahimovic.
Bad service, you think?
I think bad service, and so much is left for him to do, and he's out there playing on the wide to try and pick up a ball and then jink his way in, and it doesn't work like that. I think Inter do have possibly the weapons at their disposal. If Mourinho were to use them to set up in a more creative fashion in the midfield, at least, so that there would be some decent service for whoever's up front with Ibrahimovic, which arguably shouldn't be Adriano in his current state. But he doesn't like Mancini anymore. He doesn't reckon Quaresma's any good, so he's loaned him out. He doesn't like, interestingly enough, the one pure trequartista that they have, the guy who would sit in the hole, the Chilean Jimenez, who.
And also he's got a lot of reservations about Balotelli. He doesn't like Balotelli's brother had the influence on Balotelli.
Oh, really?
I think he was asked one time, when will Balotelli start? He said, when he becomes more intelligent, said Jose trenchantly.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But anyway, well done to Man United because they did look awesome without scoring a goal. And well done to Gus hitting too. Does seem to have had a bit of an effect on the Chelsea mentality, Barry.
Well, he does. He's got Didier Drogba playing again. And I think Drogba's a thunder in disgrace who should be thoroughly ashamed of himself, because the manner in which he conducted himself under Scolari was so childish. Yeah. And this is coming from me, who's capable of, you know, unbelievable acts of childishness.
Didier, if you're listening and you'd like a chance to reply to these accusations, guardian.co.uk/football, the place to do that. Just post your thoughts on Barry Glendening, perhaps. Some of his performances.
Well, the thing is, I don't have his latent talent, you know, so I could be excused for being rubbish week in, week out.
Right. Well, I tell you what, we mentioned Roma before and the fact that they had turned things around in the group stage when they lost at Stamford Bridge but then beat Chelsea 3-1 at home. Are they capable of turning around the Arsenal tie, do you think, in similar fashion?
Absolutely. I think certainly when we've seen them, from what we've seen from England, i.e. in Europe, they are quite formidable at home. Even when they lost 7-1 to Manchester United, they beat them at home. They beat Chelsea really well in the group stages. Arsenal are defending well at the moment, but you still suspect there's a genuine fragility there. So I think Roma have a very decent chance.
Right. Is Simone Loria the worst player you've ever seen anywhere on a football pitch at any time?
I've never seen him play. So.
Right, okay.
But was he the one who fell over when Eboué missed?
Conceiver. He's certainly the chap who tried who leapt to challenge for a ball and it sailed over his head. He's just been doing that all season. Him being in the starting lineup, I think, was an indication of the fact that Roma did not have all their
Will they play Totti and Vucinic in the home leg?
Neither, I think, was particularly fit yesterday. Vucinic only... Oh, sorry, on Tuesday. It does depend. With Totti, I think any predictions are ill-advised because his health comes and goes. But he certainly wasn't 100% on Tuesday. But, you know, well done to Robin van Persie and that. And well done as well to Colo Touré and William Gallas for making it on for the second half. Babe.
Wasn't that funny?
Were they not watching the end of MasterChef? Was that?
Well, Colo Touré famously got booked at the start of the second half. He's a very superstitious man. And he
Arsenal started the second half with just nine players.
Yes, probably because William Gallas was getting treatment to a foot injury in the dressing room, I think. And Colo Touré is so insistent on being last man out of the dressing room. It's a superstition of his that he wouldn't leave until Gallas left. So the two of them ambled out. The game had started. And Touré ran onto the field without permission from the referee, got booked. Gallas didn't get booked because he was adjusting his boot or something on the sideline, so he got waved on. So now, am I correct in thinking that if Touré was to get booked again, say in a semi-final, he would miss the final, which couldn't really be considered good luck, so he'd probably need to revise his superstitions.
Right, have you got any suggestions of other ones he might like to employ?
Well, there are plenty to choose from. I was having a look today just at various footballer superstitions. John Terry is a very, very superstitious man. He insists on sitting in the same on the team bus all the time, listening to the same Usher CD, always parking in the same spot, presumably a disabled person's bay. He had a lucky pair of shin pads, which he lost in 2004 after discarding them at the Nou Camp, and he had a real go at the kit man because the kit man couldn't find them. But then and he was quoted at the time as saying, "Those shin pads have got me to where I was in the game." But luckily, Frank Lampard gave him another pair of shin pads, so it was presumably one of those he used to shank the ball against the post in last year's Champions League final. Gary Lineker never used to score during the warm-up because he liked to keep his scoring for during games. And if he didn't score in the first half of a game, he'd change his shirt at half-time. But if he did score in the first half, leave the same shirt on. Cristiano Ronaldo gets his hair cut at the same hairdressers in Wilmslow and Cheshire before every game. But I suspect that it might be more vanity than superstition. A player from a Zimbabwean club side.
Midlands Portland Cement.
Yes.
All right.
The squad was sent to be cleansed in the Zambezi River. 17 went in, 16 came out, and they reckon some unlucky bloke was taken by a crocodile. And Neil Warnock had a real problem with superstitions, so much so that he was getting to the stage where he thought he needed psychiatric help, and many think he still needs psychiatric help. But he would stop at traffic lights on the way to the ground, even if they weren't red. He used to wear the same suit, lucky suit and lucky tie. If he went to a game with somebody and his team lost, he would ban that person from going to the next game. But he reckons he's cut them all out now. So, and then you have David Beckham, who isn't so much superstitious. He has obsessive compulsive.
Well, a lot of them do. I mean, Paul Gascoigne, famously, you could take your pick from his. But he had this thing of having to tap the steering wheel between every lamppost or streetlight, which when he was driving up the motorway involved a great deal of tapping. I did a bit of parallel research to yours. Or actually borrowed on other papers' parallel research.
I reckon you may just have printed off the stuff I printed and
why didn't you mention
it?
Sergio Goycochea, who had a legendary routine for facing penalties, which involved him urinating on the pitch. And Johan Cruyff, who used to slap his goalkeeper Gert Bals in the stomach, or it might have been Gert's stomach, while he was at Ajax, and then spitting his chewing gum into the opposition's half before kickoff.
Hmm? Lauren Blanc used to kiss Barthez's head.
Yep.
And I've heard a story, I think it came from Steve McManaman, so maybe you could check this out next time you see him in the Setanta studios. He apparently divulged the information that Ian Rush had a superstition that he used to crack one off the wrist in the toilets before Liverpool games, allegedly. Superstitious self-gratification.
That's horrible.
I like the fact he dressed it up as a superstition.
Oh, do me.
Well, I'll do that before every pod.
Now, we'll be moving on to part two then very swiftly, in which we'll be talking, of course, about Liverpool, who had the most impressive of the English results this week, and talking about all sorts of other things too, and getting the Spanish reaction to Real's defeat at the Bernabeu.
Football Weekly Extra from Guardian.co.uk.
Well, there you go then. Man United dominating the San Siro, but goalless. Chelsea and Arsenal both getting home wins against Juventus and Roma, respectively. Liverpool, though, going to Spain without... to all intents and purposes, Steven Gerrard, and still winning 1-0. Very impressive stuff from Rafael Benitez's side.
I'm told it's unwatchable, but that's what you'd expect, isn't it? I mean, a well-controlled, planned game. It's fascinating, Alex Ferguson's comment the other day, but saying that Real Madrid couldn't win the European Cup because they're too slow. And I guess the exception would be Robin, but I gather from reading Paul Hayward's piece in the Guardian that he wasn't at his most intrepid last night, shall we say.
Robin played quite well last night. He looked Real's most likely goal scorer, cut inside from the right wing on two occasions in quick succession and fired off shots that weren't too far wide.
I think Paul was suggesting that he was discouraged by the occasional tackle seemed to put
him
in a bad mood.
Well, never standing up in the tackle. I mean, Robin is a coward. He's totally gutless, always has been, but he is fast and he did look, you know, could probably consider himself unlucky not to
Drogba,
score
Robin,
last night.
Anyone else?
Were Liverpool worth their win, do you think?
They were, yeah. I mean, they didn't have Gerrard. Torres got injured early doors and eventually had to be taken off, I think, with about half an hour to go. It was unwatchable dirge. I managed to sit through it. Yossi Benyoun, they scored from a set piece. It was awful marking by Gaga and I can't remember, but they were just standing like Easter Island statues, and Benyoun fired in a bullet header. I've always rated Benyoun. I think he's played well any time he's got his chance this season, and he certainly did well last night.
Excellent. So Torres is going to be out at least for this weekend's game at Middlesbrough. Which
don't think it really matters, though, does it?
Well, Liverpool's
campaign is pretty much over in the league, isn't it?
I'm not sure about that. This is usually the time that they pull off a surprise win over Liverpool about this point in the season after they've had a zero in the way of goals or points for months on end. So I quite fancy them to pull off a surprise there. But
I will say, like Ian Rush pulling off a surprise. I will say my prediction on Monday that three English teams will go out and Liverpool won't is nicely poised. For
it is interestingly
game.
Poised, isn't it? Yeah. Did you back that up?
No, but one of our listeners did. I believe it was 100-something to 1. So hopefully he'll win a few bob because he's promised me a drink.
Well, we should get the reaction from Spain, of course, to Liverpool's big win. So let's dial up Sid Lowe, hey? Sid, is that you on line one?
It is me, yeah.
Fantastic. How's everything going with you?
Very well, thank you.
Right, nice one. What's the reaction in Spain then this morning to Real Madrid's defeat at home to Liverpool?
Well, as you can imagine, it kind of swings from anger to frustration to a little bit of... there's also a little bit of kind of a sense of realisation that, hang on a minute, maybe Real Madrid are not that good. And maybe even, and this is obviously what always happens when results go against you in the Champions League, it starts a kind of a process of soul-searching about Spanish football in general. Because, of course, we've come through a week when none of the Spanish teams managed to win. And with the exception of Barcelona, who drew 1-1 away, all of them look like they're in pretty difficult positions for the second leg.
They're doing even worse than the Italians, Sid.
They are doing it. It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. I think obviously, really, rather than talking about whether or not this means that Spanish football is poor or whether or not it means that Spanish football is at a bad time, it's probably fairer to go through it game by game and look at the clubs individually, because Atletico Madrid have been awful in Spain as well. So them drawing 2-2 at home maybe isn't a huge surprise. Villarreal have really struggled of late. Barcelona have taken their foot off the gas a little bit, and you know, 1-1 away is not that bad a result. And Real Madrid, despite that 9-game winning run, until the last couple of games, they hadn't really been that impressive. And let's face it, they were up against Liverpool. And if ever there's a team that's capable of going into Europe, playing very, very defensively, very tight and winning, or even drawing away from home, is Liverpool.
Very interesting. Panathinaikos, how far can they go this year? Could they be the dark horses, do you think?
Well, I mean, they were the better side against Villarreal, and they're a side that obviously they won their group, so they're clearly not that awful. It's impossible to know, because I have to say I've only seen them play a couple of times, but certainly they made Villarreal look relatively average.
What's happening to Barcelona, Sid? Three games without a victory now.
Yeah, and I do think they're a little bit tired. I do think I wouldn't go so far as to say the wheels have come off, but I do think they're spluttering a little bit. I think one of the main reasons really is that they've had an extremely intense month where they've played midweek and weekend every single week, and that's something that perhaps hasn't been noticed in Madrid, because Real Madrid, of course, have gone on this fantastic run, partly at least because they've had 7 days to prepare every single game. I also think it was inevitable that Barcelona were gonna slow at some stage. And despite the fact that they're not playing brilliantly, they're not getting as good results as they were. You know, they've still only been beaten once since the first game of the season. They're still in a good position in the Champions League, and they're still 7 points clear.
Sid, there was a lot of stuff, largely nonsense, I'd imagine, generated by a well-known high street bookmaker that Rafa Benitez wouldn't see out the week as Liverpool manager. Now, assuming he is going to stay until the end of the season at least, but given the fact that his side is so excruciating to watch, do you think that would ever stand against him becoming Real Madrid manager?
Yeah, very definitely. I think what we'll see is that if Liverpool get through against Real Madrid and play particularly well at Anfield, then I think we'll see people here in Spain talk about Rafa Benitez being a possible candidate for Real Madrid coach. And certainly this morning, you know, the Spanish press is talking about Benitez having given a bit of a tactical lesson to Juan de Ramos. But the flip side of that is you read between the lines, and in fact, you don't even have to read between the lines, to be honest, the statements are there. Rafa Benitez is a coach that's respected here, but not liked. And there's a sense that Liverpool were very dull. There's a sense that you know, Real Madrid fell into the trap of playing boring tactical football rather than expansive football. And one of the quotes that I think really sums it up is that Real Madrid made the mistake of trying to play chess against Kasparov, and that's the problem. They allowed themselves to play a Benitez-style game. Now, I think what will happen, as I say, is that if Liverpool beat Real Madrid and play well in the second leg at Anfield, I think you'll see that one or two presidential candidates for the summer elections in Madrid will say, well, hang on a minute, Benitez is not a bad choice. But all of that's going to be irrelevant, because if Florentino Perez stands, and I think he probably will in the end, he will go for a coach that will not be Benitez. Benitez doesn't fit his plans for a couple of reasons. The first one, of course, is that he wants exciting fantasy football. Whether it's good for the club is another issue. And the second one is that Benitez is a coach that wants to control everything, and Florentino Perez is a president that wants to control everything. It's impossible for those two to get on.
Sid, Espanyol reopened the Spanish title race last weekend by beating Barcelona. Are they going to close it again by beating Real Madrid this weekend?
Well, there's a possibility. I think if you look at the way Espanyol have been playing of late, they haven't been losing, but they haven't been winning. They're horribly difficult for them to score goals. But against Barcelona, they got back Ivan de la Peña. You look at their record without him, I think it's 14 games, 9 defeats, no victories. With him, even before the game against Barcelona, it was 7 games, only 1 defeat, 3 wins. It's now 8 games, only 1 defeat, and 4 wins. So with de la Peña back in the side, they suddenly have that little touch of creativity that they simply do not have without him. Raúl Tomullo, the top scorer, may well be back again. And in the last few years, Espanyol have tended to get good results against Real Madrid.
Okay. All right. So a disappointing week. Although Barcelona, of course, they've got their away goal. So that's not bad after that fantastic opening free kick by Juninho, which was appreciated, Barry, by the British media.
Yeah, well, an Irish media man, I'm embarrassed to say, but Craig Doyle on ITV, their splendid coverage continues. Juninho's free kick prompted Craig Doyle to liken him to Ronaldo.
Afterwards he said, well, we always talk about Ronaldo being the free kick master, but if Juninho keeps scoring like this, he could have some competition. How about that, eh? He's praise Welsh. Indeed, Juninho, keep at it.
I think the real praise is your Irish accent, isn't it?
That's pretty good, isn't it?
So speaking about
identifiably Irish.
So speaking about that goal, though,
the big idea.
Did you not think launching a complaint with HR immediately? I won't put up with these racist attacks.
I'll try and ease the tension. Said that. Do you not think?
I think James Richardson's just turned into Alan Partridge, hasn't he? So Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Just turned into Alan Partridge.
Kevin.
Sorry, a boring, boring question. I wasn't too sure about Victor Valdez at that goal. And he was rubbish at the weekend, wasn't he, as well? I mean, do you think he's kind of a
great free kick, though?
I'm not saying that, but I bet you any goalkeeping coach would have been cuffing him about the head afterwards, nonetheless. I just wondered, because you were saying he was at fault at the weekend too, wasn't he, certain the defeat?
Yeah, I have to say, I think Victor Valdez is a goalkeeper. Every now and again makes very, very good saves, but he's just not a goalkeeper you trust when you see him play. And Pep Guardiola said after the game against Olympic Lyon that 7 goalkeepers wouldn't have saved that. I'm not sure which 7 he's talking about. But anyway, he claimed that seven goalkeepers wouldn't have saved it. I personally think Valdez should have saved it. I agree with you. I think it was a very well-hit free kick. And it was similar to Ronaldo in the way that it dropped and was struck.
Sid, that's excellent stuff. Many, many thanks. And look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
Yeah, hope so. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. Now, also in Europe this week, of course, Bayern had the runaway success of the last 16 with that 5-0 victory at Sporting Lisbon. I'm guessing that none of us here actually saw the game.
No, I just saw it. It's interesting. They had two wingers and two forwards. So I guess it's an attractive way to play it, especially if it gives you five goals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have to say, we always get pulled up by our listeners if we make a mistake. Yeah. So I'd just like to draw everyone's attention to poster Swander87, who said, and I quote, "Sporting Lisbon won't be a pushover for Bayern Munich." So in your face, Swander, in your face.
Yeah, how dare you have the temerity to make some comment about football on our post. Barry, that's really sweet. You actually hand wrote down
I did.
In your black book. Yeah. You're in his black book. What's the poster's name?
Swander87.
How many other posters do you have in your black book?
None. It's mainly for girls, but he's made it in just by dint of getting a prediction horribly wrong, because wow, none of us ever do that.
Chuckle. Oh, now, also on the Euro front, the UEFA Cup, excitingly enough, hey, Rob Smythe, Aston Villa in Moscow without their first team, by and large, and Spurs are doing more or less the same thing with their game against Shakhtar Donetsk. What's the story here? What's the point of getting into the UEFA Cup if you're just going to then bury your way back out again?
There is no point in getting into it. It's an absolute joke of a competition. It's been ruined by UEFA, this process of dropping Champions League runners-up or teams that don't qualify for the knockout stages into it has destroyed it completely. There are too many games. There are too many bad teams. Harry Redknapp, how is his football team supposed to play all these matches? It's very unfair making them play games. And I think, as you said it to me earlier, James, before we went on air, that it's a harder competition to get out of than it is to get into.
Well, actually, that was borrowed from somebody else. But it is astonishing, Kevin. You were saying, how many teams are still left in?
I think they're down to the last 128 now, aren't we?
It's shocking.
32. No, but I was going to say earlier on, this rebranding exercise. Yeah. I mean, it's like the wind scale gets called Sellafield to try and detract you from the fact that nuclear processing was taking place and it might be a bit toxic. And the same is true of the UEFA Cup. It's toxic too, and it's going to be renamed Europa Cup next season.
But there are going to be some changes as well. It's not just a fancy new title.
A bit more streamlined. Only 500 teams will be involved next season.
Well, Barry, you've been sent to look this up.
Yeah, thanks for that job. They have a new logo with a what looks more like a cricket ball than a football, so they'll have a new official match ball, a nice goal.
The current one is a kind of Matisse-esque dancers around some kind of plinth.
Well, the next one is, I don't know enough about art to...
It does look like a cricket ball, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's sort of a gold ball with a red stripy bits on it.
The Europa League.
It's like Kevin said, it's very much a case of rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic. We'll have 12 four-team groups to start with, and they'll play each other home and away.
Right.
Then the top two in each group will join the eight rejects from the big cup, and no FA Cup losing final. That'll be for the knockout round, and no FA Cup losing finalists will be allowed in, like, say, Millwall were in 2005.
Right, the excitement is building here at the pod. So effectively, it's almost exactly the same.
Pretty much, yeah. But with nicer football. But I did read the UEFA press release.
Oh, yeah.
And the word football appears in it twice, and the word sponsor appears in it five times, and the word branding appears in it about seven times. So, you know, I think we can see where UEFA's head is at for that.
Yeah, interesting. Well, there are some interesting clashes in the UEFA Cup last 500 on Thursday night, but we can possibly tell you about those on Monday once they've taken place. That's probably enough in the meantime for part two. As ever, you can always get up to date at news@guardian.co.uk/football. But in a second or two, we'll have your posts. Quick look at what the weekend holds for us. Right, now, posting in this week, Cavinho 8. Does anyone know a girl from Honduras named Isabel who lives in York? We met on Saturday night, says Cavinho 8, but her number hasn't saved in my phone. Can anyone help? Listeners?
I could help him by saying the number she gave him probably wasn't hers, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. If my experience of getting numbers from girls in York on Saturday night is anything to go by.
Right, well, I'm sure everyone's read that post, but if anyone's out there who doesn't go to the Guardian's immensely entertaining posting page under the Football Weekly site, then if you do know a girl from Honduras named Isabel who lives in York, or if indeed your name is Isabel and you met somebody who goes by the moniker of Cavinio 8, etc., well, do get in touch. I'm sure we'd all love to see a happy ending there, and I'm not talking about some kind of Ian Rush pre-game.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay, Meho Codro. Oh, ships entering Portsmouth Harbour make an entry in the ship's log, Pom P, as a reference to Portsmouth Point. That is probably the likeliest explanation of Portsmouth being Pompey, which was one of the questions on Monday. Thanks very much for that. Lee Herring, following the news of Darlington going into an administration today, surely it is worth giving a mention to their stadium, which must beat even the Seth Johnson incident as the epitome of football excess and hubris. Can I, first off, Seth Johnson incident, what's this?
Didn't he...
When he signed for Leeds,
yeah.
Him and his agent, this is an apocryphal tale, I don't know if it's true or not, himself and his agent went into Peter Ridsdale's office and they said, right, we're not going to settle for a penny less than 15 grand a week. And they went in and Ridsdale said, right, you can have 45 grand a week. That's my final offer. So they went, okay.
Despite its 27,000 all-seater capacity, I'm going back to Darlington's new stadium today, they're not actually allowed more than 10,000 people, almost a third of that, in it for a football match because the roads and parking can't handle it.
It's incredible. There's a roundabout beside it. I remember when they built it, I thought, how can this be a football stadium with a roundabout right on top of it? And I can understand the problem, but it's amazing they didn't think there might be any difficulty.
Right, they've had six names for the place since it's opened. Does any other club have a lower average attendance as a percentage of capacity than Darlington?
Juventus?
It's going to be Juventus, isn't it? Yeah. Mr. Gareth E says, Podmeister says, I can forgive the build of a, I can forgive the lack of a build up to the biggest, yeah, etc. But do please have a talk about the Carling Cup final, preferably with a mild pro Spurs anti United slant. Rob, you're our man there then. Carling Cup final.
Well,
Man United care about this, don't they?
Do they?
The quintuple.
Darren Gibson's playing, which suggests
that
it can, well, they do up to a point, but. It clearly means a whole lot more to Spurs. I think United will start with essentially a reserve team, but with people like Ronaldo and Rooney on the bench in emergencies. But clearly, it's kind of it will probably define Spurs' season, whereas United hope it will just be a very
Surely
minor
Manchester
detail.
Manchester United reserve team is better than the Spurs' first team.
Have you seen Darren Gibson play?
No, not very often. I've seen Spurs play.
Do you reckon Danny Welbeck's quite a promising player, though?
Yeah, he is. He's got kind of the two goals he scored show a real touch of class, particularly the one at Derby. And he's still only 17. Slightly odd player, very kind of odd movement. So I remember Ferguson likened him to Kanu a few months ago. And you can kind of see what he means.
He's got that strength too, hasn't he? You can see he's going to be a kind of powerful figure.
Other Man United reserves potentially are Carlos Tevez.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll start. I'm sure Nani will probably play.
Yeah. Sounds impressive. What about in goal, though?
Well, there's a strange thing going on there with Kuszczak and Foster, because Foster was on the bench in Milan, but Kuszczak played last week and played with his usual ineptitude. So I don't really know. I suspect Foster will play.
If you win this game, you get into the UEFA Cup next year. Is that right?
And I think that's important. You never know. They might lose the last 12 league games and they might need this.
Right.
It's a strange for the Carling Cup. I mean, for a top four club, I only really mean something where they're kind of re-establishing themselves. Like it was Terry's first trophy and Lampard's, and it was Rudy's at United. But now that United are in a position of strength, it's almost an inconvenience, really.
Almost
which sounds a terrible thing to say.
No, no, it doesn't. I think the Carling Cup is an inconvenience. I resent having to look it up and care about it and talk about it.
If United were not to win the league, I think Ferguson might resent not sending out a really poor team in the first game, because this will cost them one league fixture that will have to be put later on, and they are going to have a build up because of it.
Right. No matter what we say, I bet you Ferguson's obsessed with the idea of a Grand Slam. He'll really want to win this
on
Sunday.
True,
no matter what anyone says, the whole lot. Of course he wants to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's more prestigious than the UEFA Cup.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe next year they should drop the beaten FA Cup fourth round teams into the fifth round of the Cup.
And have turn in group stages instead of knockout.
Well, there you go. Oh, a couple of big games in Italy. where Palermo are taking on Catania. Kevin, I know you don't think much of the atmosphere in Italian stadiums, but you might want to head along to the Favorito. You might have a bit too much.
I can believe you.
Yeah. Although, actually, as usual, no away fans are allowed.
Actually, the atmosphere is fantastic in San Siro. Yeah. Brilliant.
Well, you do get, and I have to say, the Juve fans were in cracking voice.
Also, very lucrative. They made a packet out of that into Milan.
They did. Well, there you go. But anyway, Palermo, Catania, huge game there down in Sicily. At the other end of the country, Inter are taking on Roma. Inter have a 9-point lead in Serie A. But they've only got one draw in their last three home visits from Roma, I think. Roma certainly had a brilliant 3-2 win there, thanks to one of Francesco Totti's all-time greatest goals. Oh, well, thanks in part to that. A couple of years back. And if Roma were to beat Inter at the San Siro, with one or two interesting games coming up for the Nerazzurri, like the clash with Genoa and Fiorentina, and they also have to travel to Juventus, then maybe Inter's title wouldn't be quite as decided as it currently looks. And it's worth pointing out, as indeed somebody was doing this morning, that Inter last season had a 12-point lead at the top of the table this year, but at half-time on the final day of the season were losing the title. So it could well come down to the last day all over again. Now, in the Premier League, meanwhile, there's nothing that special. Is that fair to say?
Nothing. No, I mean, last weekend's Premier League games were fairly uninspiring. Yeah. And this weekend's fixtures don't look great either. Can I give you an absolute blinding Premier League stat?
Please do.
Yes. Tomorrow being Friday,
yes,
will be 10 years to the day since Aston Villa became the last team to field an all-English 11 in the Premier League.
My word.
And they brought on three.
What have you been doing to find that stat?
You wouldn't believe what I had to do to get that stat. And they brought on three subs who were also English. Smiley probably rattled the team off there.
Where did they finish in the league that season? Well, the
game in question, they got beaten 4-1 by Coventry at home.
Which makes sense, doesn't it?
But the team was managed by John Gregory. Oakes, Wright, Southgate, Watson, Simica, Taylor, Merson, Grayson, Hendry, Dublin, Joachim, and the subs that came on were Draper, Collymore, and Mr. Gareth Barry.
My word, eh?
I don't think you were as impressed with my stat as I thought you would.
No, I'm really impressed with it. I think it's very, very interesting. Little snapshot of a world gone by. Perhaps never to return, eh?
Doubt it will ever return.
Well, I mean, certainly when you look at the dominance or the success of English clubs in Europe, it's you got the Spanish winning in Real Madrid, the Spanish in this case being Liverpool. You got
I mean, isn't it funny how the strength of your native players doesn't seem to matter very much? I mean, Italy are the world champions, we get guys at Balotelli coming through, but yeah, it doesn't make the teams thrive necessarily in the Champions League.
No, it's all about who's got the most money to buy expensive foreigners.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. Well, there you go. Arsenal, Fulham, Chelsea, Wigan, Everton, West Brom, Borough, Liverpool, Aston Villa, Stoke, Bolton, Newcastle, Hull, Blackburn, and West Ham, Man City.
You reckon Middlesbrough are going to do a job on Liverpool?
Well,
I think they might as well.
Might do. It's happened before. I reckon a 2-2 draw there. I said it. I can't believe I've just predicted Borough to score two goals in a single game for the second time in a week. Ignore me, listeners, but you might like to return on Monday when we return with Football Weekly and round up all the weekend's stuff and look forward to the midweek round in the Premier League. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Rob Smythe, Kevin McCarra, and Barry Glendening, and producer Pete, who won't be with us next week. So we'll be produced by another with predictably hilarious consequences. Do tune in for that. Enjoy your time off, producer Pete.
In Cornwall.
Which is nice at this time of year, I believe.
Yes. Sorry. Nice and cold.
Any time of year. Lovely. We'll be speaking to you after the weekend. Have a super one.